Today on our show, I'm talking with Jonathan Kalb. Jonathan, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Jonathan, let's talk about what you're involved in now. What are you involved in at this moment?
Well, I wear a number of hats. I'm a professor at Hunter College, and I blog about the theater. I'm a dramaturg at a New York theater for a new audience, but I also run a public event program called Theater Matters. It takes place at Here Arts Center, and that's what I'm kind of immersed in at the moment. It's taking a lot of my time, and that's because it's exciting and it's going well. So, yeah.
So let's talk about Theater Matters, because I think that's I think it's important in a number of ways. You know, I talk to different artists, writers, people within the arts community, and there's always artists and writers and people in that community who are also creating resources at some time. And Theater Matters seems to be one of these kind of important resources and for critical discussion, which we could go into in a number of ways. But maybe tell me a little bit about how it started, and I'd also like to then discuss where it's at right now and what has recently happened with it. But how did this begin, Theater Matters?
Well, I don't think I have to explain that we're in a kind of a degraded time for criticism in general. It's not just that the pages devoted to it have disappeared along with a lot of the publications that used to carry it. It's also the Internet, which is cacophonous and has leveled the playing field so that all opinions seem to weigh equally. We no longer believe in expert opinion in the same way we did before, no longer value it. But that doesn't mean we don't need it. We just, on a mass scale, are not sure we need it. And so it's created a lot of confusion. I see a lot of reviews that other people don't see because of being a dramaturg at a theater, and I see the average quality of the critical response to New York productions. And it's so low, it's so ignorant, it's so uninformed. The number of real critics we have writing is very, very small. And I've done a number of things over the years to try and address this. I founded an online journal called Hunter Online Theater Review. It lasted 13 years. This was a Theater Matters, an attempt to try and address the problem in a different way, because I see things a little differently as I get older and work more for a theater. I see how poor criticism affects the theater community, which has a particular antagonism toward criticism that even other arts don't have. A friend of mine, David Cohen, was doing a review panel series called The Review Panel for years, in which he would review art shows with other critics and sometimes artists in front of a live audience, and he'd record it for online posting. And I would go to these things with my wife, who's a painter, and just sit in awe, not just of the quality of the discourse, but also of the community involvement. Art people buy into the act of criticism, its value, its worth, its purpose, more than theater people do. Theater people see critics generally as their enemies. And I would sit there thinking, I wonder if something like this could happen with theater. And so I decided to try it. And that's what Theater Matters is. It's my version of the Art Critical Review Panel with theater. I invite two working critics, along with a working theater artist, to choose two current plays in New York. We all go see them together, and we review them conversationally in front of a live audience, and we take Q&A with the audience, and these conversations have been marvelous. They've been extraordinarily substantial. The audience has welcomed them and participated. And I've been thrilled at the response and at the participation, and it's moved venues twice. It's now at Here Art Center in Manhattan.
That's very exciting. And you know, so to go a little further into this, and maybe even talk about a current one, you know, in the beginning of this, you talked about the community and how criticism, as I understood what you were saying, poor criticism can affect a community. So before we talk about maybe an example of a recent exciting conversation or a moment in the panel, how does it affect a community? Because I think that's a very kind of nuanced and interesting point of view, that that poor criticism can affect the community. And by community, I assume you mean the community of people who are interested in the theater, but correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, you know, we have this situation now where most people who think they have read theater criticism haven't really, not something I would call criticism. They've read reviews, they've read online commentary, but they don't really know what an informed, intelligent voice is going to offer them, which invariably is going to be something other than an opinion. It's going to be a way to think about the art that they never considered before. It may be introducing background and points of view that they don't have. That's part of the joy of critical discussion. I think the thing is, we all know, if we're theatergoers, what a joy it is to talk about the play afterwards. That's one of the pleasures. But if you can listen in on, eavesdrop on, say, a table or a panel full of people talking about the play you just saw in a very informed way, that ratchets up the excitement. It seems to me it's something a lot of people don't even know they would enjoy, but I'm trying to provide on these panels.
And in the recent panel, perhaps we can talk a little bit about what happens there to entice people to come there and get involved. Has anything in particular surprised you lately, or a conversation got particularly lively that was exciting to participate in?
Oh, absolutely. Every single one of these panels has had a surprise in it. It's wonderful. You know, my criterion for success on these panels is that something happens that could only happen in this form. That's what I want. I want something to occur because the criticism is conversational and communal that actually wouldn't happen in an essay or a printed piece of criticism. So, for example, last time we had Jose Solis, who is a Honduran-American critic. He has a point of view that white critics just don't have. And one of the plays for discussion was Soft Power. That is a play by David Henry Wang, who is a Chinese-American. And so we got to talking in the panel about how the point of view of the other is actually crucial in evaluating Soft Power. But then the other play was brought in, Heroes of the Fourth Turning, which is by Will Arbery, and it's about conservative right-wing Catholics. And many of them are homophobic. And Jose, who is queer as well as Honduran-American, started talking about all of the things that are missed about his world by the people in that play. It was a discussion that I think needed to be had in person. That was a bit of conversational criticism that you could not really evoke just in a single authored piece of writing. It had to happen conversationally. So that's an example. But there's lots of other examples. On our very first panel, we were talking about Angels in America and Jerry Springer, the opera. And I had a hunch that there were crossovers between these two works, but I did not have any idea how many interesting parallels the panelists would pull out between those two works. They made them talk to one another, which means that the panel became a comment on the current moment in New York and in the United States. That's what these things should be. A critical response to the art that's being produced at the present moment in the theater in our city.
And the audience in these examples that you've given, it sounds like it would bring a lot out of the audience, especially in the first example. Well, in the second example, it's terrific how those would compare. But in the first example, in terms of experiences of the other queer experience, was the audience also contributing a lot? Because that becomes a kind of fascinating exploration of also points of view and getting multiple perspectives on messages or aspects within the piece.
Yeah, I don't remember the audience weighing in with Jose, but there is a kind of respectful silence that happens after someone says something that makes you aware how closely people are listening. Sometimes silence is a compliment as much as, you know, a raucous flurry of questions. I don't think Jose's remarks caused a lot of questioning. No.
It's very exciting what you're doing there. And so this will continue and it will grow. Is it how can listeners get involved in the series if they wish to attend?
Well, all they have to do is go to our website, which is www.theatermatters.net. They can put their name on our mailing list, and then they'll get all the announcements of upcoming events.
And I encourage listeners to do that, and I hope they do. I want to ask you also about any other aspects of writing that you're doing. I mean, we talked mostly about Theater Matters in this talk, but is there anything else you want to talk about that I should have asked about? It could be a recent piece of writing, review, or something you've seen in New York.
Well, I have a blog, which I have called Theater Matters, because I've realized that this project should all be one thing. I don't often write about the plays we discuss on the panels, but I write at least several times a month about current theater in New York on my blog, and I just wrote about The History of Violence by Edouard Luis, and I wrote about the first ever play by a white author at the Billie Holiday Theater in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, Reparations. You know, I like to think that my blog can be a place for kind of a talky essay review that maybe doesn't have so many other places to appear in our time. That's the way I think about the blog. I also like the fact that it's a blog so that people can talk back to me if they want to. You know, we had a wonderful new critic for 2 years in New York, Sarah Holdren, whom you should talk to because she's just brilliant, writing for New York Magazine and The Vulture, because she's a Yalie. You should talk to her. Anyway, the kind of essay that she would write for The Vulture was amazing, and I would just avidly read her every week because she was always saying something brilliant that nobody else ever said. But if you scroll down to her comment sections, was almost always just either one trolling person who was just angry or nobody. The better the writing, the fewer the comments. It's kind of a shame, but she didn't create a lot of a conversation because it was just too good. You know, this is the irony of writing well, is that it discourages people talking back to you, and the internet sort of favors sloppy thinking and poor writing so that people can get angry and snappish and just, you know, suddenly tell you how you're wrong and so on.
Right. That's so interesting. So to step back from all of it, looking at theater in 2019, in this age, you know, in this, you know, political era that we're in, it sounds very exciting what's happening with Theater Matters, too. And for the theater I've seen, it seems like exciting things are happening out there. I just saw a slave play, and it was fascinating to me, and as well as other things by that particular playwright. But what I'm getting at is, what do you think of theater in this moment, in 2019? You know, we talk about, or some people talk about TV having a bit of a golden age now, movies with Netflix and all this stuff that's happening, and the visual arts, actually. There's a lot of amazing things happening in the visual arts world, whether Everyone there would think we're in a golden age or not. It's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty open and encouraging, and there's a lot of great art coming out. How do you see that in the theater world? Is that a fair question for me to ask? I'm just trying to get a kind of perspective on what you're doing. Sounds so kind of alive and exciting, and so I'm kind of wondering how you see the state of theater, independent from criticism, because obviously people are attending it, right?
You know, if you had asked me that question back when I was a weekly columnist for New York Press and seeing four plays a week, I would have given you a grumbly, dyspeptic answer because I was seeing too much. Nobody should ever see everything in New York. It just poisons you. But if you're just a normal person like I am now, you know, just seeing plays maybe twice a week or once a week, I think you have a sense of just how healthy the art is, of how necessary the art is. There's a wonderful play called Mr. Burns by Anne Washburn that played in New York in 2013 about an apocalyptic situation where there was no electricity anymore and people had to invent the culture again. It was a very wonderfully strange play in which remembered lines from The Simpsons became currency, this young group of people started doing plays with episodes of The Simpsons, which then, after 75 years, nobody remembered the real Simpsons. They all had distorted what their parents and grandparents had told them, and it became a new mythology that they used for theater. The reason I'm telling you this is because it's a play that explains in a really fun way that if all of a sudden we had nothing, we would have to invent the theater all over again. And it's as necessary to us as criticism and as breathing. We would have to have it. The mediated forms of entertainment are not enough for us. There's always going to be a need for this live encounter that theater provides. And it is a minority form. It's not a mass form, clearly. But it's absolutely not going anywhere.
I'm so glad you said that. And I want to ask you one more question, which is, what are you reading at the moment?
I have been reading a wonderful book by Lewis Hyde called A Primer for Forgetting. Lewis Hyde is a favorite of mine. I just cathected to him years ago when I read The Gift, which was a gift by a friend of mine. But this book is about how, even though we think we are a culture of remembering, of memory, we think memory is the most important. He has collected over the years a notebook full of instances where forgetting is no less important, that sometimes you need to not remember something, even whole incidents, in order to move forward with life. It is surprising in every chapter. I kept on telling myself I can skim, but I'm having to read every page.
Jonathan, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the conversation.
Okay, one second. I'm going to turn off the recording, but I'm still...